listening to the Cosmopolitan Hour.
Hey, I'm somebody from the room, see the room 100 times, and you're listening Cosmopolitan Hour, whatever you're listening to, listen well, okay? I'm Tommy Wiseau. Have a groovy time. Bye.
All right. Here we are, ready to start. Jordan's too busy sending emails to all her fans.
I am talking to my sister, who sent us an email, and who is still at work.
Wow.
Yes.
Isn't it like a million o'clock where she is?
9 o'clock, I think. 3 hours ahead.
How long has she been there?
I think just since noon. She works like at a call center or something like that. A customer service center or something like that. And so she has to work later sometimes.
My sympathies, Jessica.
Yes, she has an opportunity to work at a warehouse, like a music warehouse, but she's debating whether or not to take it.
Now, when you say a music warehouse, do you mean that there is sheet music stored?
I don't know.
Or it is a warehouse filled with recordings?
I'm guessing recordings, but I'm not sure.
That would be a pretty cool job for her.
Yeah.
I can imagine she would enjoy that.
I think so. I think the problem is that she lives in Montreal, and Montreal is a bilingual town.
Yes.
And she is not fluently bilingual, so
yes.
She
and we all know
gets,
how uptight those Quebecois can be.
Well, it's not even that. It's just that everybody else in the job force, sort of working force, speaks two languages. So if you don't, you're at a real disadvantage.
Right.
So.
So we should say that this is episode 64.
Yes.
And when this comes out, I think this will be our first official post-apocalyptic episode. So
that's true. So welcome to the post-apocalypse, listeners.
Welcome to hell, bitches.
I doubt you have, but if any of you have ever played Fallout 3, the video game, then just consider us Three Dog.
I don't know what that means, but I like it.
Nobody would, except for people who have played that. Fallout 3 is a post-apocalyptic game, and you kind of run around doing post-apocalyptic things, but there's a radio station, like a pirate radio station, and you listen to it in the game all the time, and the host is named Three Dog.
Excellent.
And he's actually quite likable, so I consider it a compliment.
We can be Six Dog, since there's two of us.
Yes, we could be. So should we dive right in? We have emails, and then we have lots to talk about, I think.
Yes. Let's quickly discuss our post-apocalyptic plans.
Oh, okay.
I guess we can't speculate too much on what the apocalypse will be like, because then we'll feel foolish when this comes out and it will have already happened. And, you know, it'll be like those Disney movies about the future that were made in the 50s, and they're like really totally not what the year 2000 turned out to be like at all.
Amazingly enough.
Yeah.
Disney couldn't predict the future.
So, what do you, what are some of the results that you see impacting our lives as a result of the apocalypse, the rapture?
Well, I think that the price of real estate is actually going to go down quite a bit.
Good point.
So that means that, you know, maybe you and I will each be able to buy real estate at some point in our futures.
Like, and nice houses, too.
Yeah.
Not like the cheapest dump we can afford.
Right. We'll just have to, I mean, as long as we can get the smell of fire and brimstone out of the, like, carpeting and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we're set to score pretty big.
Yeah, yeah.
Though I should say that here in San Francisco in the Bay Area, that might not happen because I'm not sure how many people are actually going to get sucked up to heaven from here.
Since the church is headquartered in Oakland.
That's true.
So, you know, maybe not so much in San Francisco, but definitely in the East Bay, there's going to be a lot of depreciated real estate flooding the market in a few days. I personally, it's a very keen insight. I hadn't thought about it that much, but I personally am looking forward to the lack of traffic. Because if anybody's ever driven on a Sunday, they can attest to how wonderful and lovely it is and how you actually get to places faster than you expected because you're just so used to being in traffic all the time. So, you know, imagine all the people that on Sunday are not on the roads because they are probably in church.
Right.
They're going to be gone every other day in addition to Sunday. So I picture driving to be a lot less of a hassle.
That's another good point. I wonder if, do Catholics get sucked up to heaven in the rapture, or do they stay down here? Because if they go, then I'm going to look forward to the pro-life marches having a lot less teeth.
Ooh, good point.
Yeah. I guess they never really have any teeth, but
I guess that's a question. It's really a question for Reverend Camping, who's the person who is the man who heads the church in Oakland. I forget the name of his church, but he's the one who has mathematically deduced that the apocalypse will happen on May 21st, 2011. Starting at 6 p.m. at the international dateline and rolling forward in accordance with time zones.
I see.
Westward from the dateline.
So you don't have to compute the time, your time zone. It's going to be conveniently coming to everybody at the same time.
Exactly, yeah. God's kind of anal retentive like that. Right. But
so he's better than network TV.
Yeah, exactly. maybe someday the apocalypse will be in syndication. So yeah, that would be a question for both Reverend Camping and for God. Sadly, the Cosmopolitan Hour did invite both of them to an open debate, but both of them declined.
They couldn't handle our hard-hitting journalism.
Yeah, I have to say I'm a little disappointed, and I think it takes away the credibility of both of them.
I do too.
Anyway,
I agree.
So that's a question for both of them to discuss, because according to God and according to the Bible, anyone who's accepted Jesus gets raptured up. But I'm sure that according to this Reverend Camping, anyone who has not accepted Jesus in his church will not be sucked up.
So, right.
I guess it'll be interesting to see who's right.
Yeah.
Will it be A, God? Will it be B, Reverend Camping?
Right.
Will it be C, none of the above?
Right.
Or what's option D? What's the wild card?
All the atheists go to heaven and everybody else stays on earth.
Boom! Okay, I like that version. Surprise!
But would heaven be an atheist hell?
No. Heaven would be like heaven for any, what anybody's personal idea of heaven.
Okay.
That's how we expect the apocalypse to impact us. That knife is amazing.
I'm sorry, I was totally...
That's an infomercial for the Yoshi blade.
I kind of want it.
Look at that thing. Cut a tomato. how do you think the apocalypse will affect vegans?
Not too much, really. I mean, depending on whether Seventh-day Adventists get sucked up or not, then we might lose a source of canned fake meat, because they do make like the scallops and the things, and I mean, I guess we might lose there are some religiously affiliated vegetarian and vegan restaurants out there, so depending on how broad the net is with the rapture, then we might lose some of them. But for the most part, I think the veganism's pretty safe because there's not. I mean, I know that, there are Christian and Catholic and whatever vegans, and that's awesome. But I think that the correlation is lower than it is with the general population.
True.
We're going to be less proportionately affected than the general population.
If, however, there is ever a rapture where Supreme Master Ching Hai takes everybody to heaven, we're fucked.
Yeah, vegans are... Well, we're going. We're going whether we like it or not.
No,
anybody
alone,
who's ever
Supreme Master.
One of her restaurants is going up. That's
it. Oh, God, I ate the forbidden fruits.
Yeah, exactly. So.
It's too late.
Yeah.
I can't help it. That lemongrass supreme or whatever, it was just really good.
I don't think I've ever had that one.
They also have vegan Thai iced tea. I mean, come on. So, yes. Anyway, moving on.
Moving on.
So, we like to believe that most of our listeners will still be around after the rapture.
Yes, and we mean that as a compliment.
Yeah, if you're listening from heaven, we're glad you can still get reception, and you're welcome to still listen.
Yes.
Maybe you need to keep in touch with what's going on back on Earth.
Yes.
But I think the majority of people will be still sticking around, downloading this on iTunes every week.
I think so.
Along with the podcast from the great unifying leader, who is really Satan in disguise.
Right. Right.
Which is just pretty much, it's not a podcast so much as it's like just 60 minutes of like babies crying and like animals howling and like screaming noises. And then it's number one on iTunes, go figure.
Yeah, who would have thought? But we would like to invite our listeners to email us or get in touch with us, however you may choose, to tell us your rapture stories.
Yeah, yeah, let us know how you're coping after the rapture.
Yeah.
And we will obviously keep you posted of how we do.
Yeah, of course.
We expect San Francisco to still be pretty heavily populated next week.
I think our office is pretty safe.
Yeah. Yeah, our jobs are safe. Mm-hmm. We're good.
Yep.
All right, so moving on. We've got some emails.
Some emails.
I'm really excited because we have four.
I know, me too. That's more than ever.
I know. I'm super excited. And the first, I have to introduce with an apology to the author.
Yes.
Julie, who wrote us on February 2nd. And somehow we did not see her email.
I don't know how that happened.
Well, what happened was that there was a deluge of email from Twitter telling us that, you know, like, Ricky Bobby Boy 23 is following you, you know.
Do we ever update our Twitter?
Only from Facebook.
Okay. I need to, I will attach the Twitter thing to my Twitter thing.
You can be the Twitter lady.
And I will tweet.
You will tweet the crap out of this shit.
I will try.
All right. Good. So anyway, we apologize to Julie, and we have found your email now.
And we are going to read it.
And I hope you still listen and don't think that we hate you. And we're very happy you wrote us, even though it was, 2-3 months ago?
Yes.
Anyway, Julie writes, "Hi, Jordan and Erica. I just finished listening to episode 56 and thought I'd send you guys a note to let you know how much I enjoyed the podcast. It was kind of ironic hearing you talk about wanting to visit Milwaukee, since I live in Greater Milwaukee and was listening to your show while shoveling 14 inches of snow from Snowmageddon 2011. That lake effect snow is a bitch. However, Kelly is right in that there is definitely some good food to be had in Wisconsin despite the obsessive cheese, beer, and bacon culture. Just stay out of the small towns if you visit, unless your idea of a good meal is Subway or a cheeseless bean burrito from Taco Bell. Check. I also appreciated Erica's commentary on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, since I'll admit to watching it on Hulu in moments of extreme boredom. I feel you there. It's a great example of all the things that could go wrong with plastic surgery, and Kelsey Grammer's wife is a total train wreck. I hear you on that one. Keep up the good work, and I'd love to have a Cosmopolitan Hour t-shirt in a women's medium. We are broadcasting Julie's size to the world.
All right.
V-necks are the best.
All right.
Best Julie. Thank you, Julie.
As far as t-shirts, we have this amazing design, and we just didn't get a lot of response from people who seemed to want them. So I know that I'd been thinking, and I had not talked to you about this, so I'm going to spring it on you right now.
Whoa.
That maybe what would be a good idea is printing some up for Vita Vegan Con, and that way we can bring them with us. And at the same time, we can print them up for our listeners who won't be able to be there and mail them out.
I think that is an excellent
idea. We'll only have to do, you know, one run of printing, and then, you know, if people want more after that, then we can kind of do more later. But
that is a capital idea.
Okay, so look for those t-shirts in August then, since that's when we will be at Vita Vegan Con.
I'm giving a thumbs up.
Yes, good.
All right.
Okay, so moving along, this is a less old email. And this one is from Simone. I am excited about this one. So here we go. Hello, Erica and Jordan. I'm a new vegan and listener and love your show. I listened to your whole back catalog and it got me more of an insight into things vegan because I am kind of totally new to it. Never really looked into that lifestyle before, I decided to become vegan to not support animal cruelty. I actually love it and don't want to go back. I wanted to write for a while to tell you about my appreciation for your ramblings, humor, and feminist views, but only got around to it today because a friend of mine sent me this, and this is a link to the YouTube Black Metal Chef. Vegan Black Metal Chef. And she says, I'm sure you will appreciate the Vegan Black Metal Chef.
Yes.
And she is right.
Yes, she is.
I also wanted to mention that shortly before I discovered you, my friends and me had one of those regular movie nights where we get stoned and watch unintentionally funny movies, probably similar to you and your boyfriend's movie nights, Erica. And we watched The Room.
Yes.
So I very much enjoyed your recaps and the intro.
Excellent.
I'm always up for tips for movie nights. One of the more successful nights, which I sadly missed due to sickness, was when they watched Queen of Outer Space with Zsa Gabor.
Ooh.
And Killer Clowns from Outer Space. One of the next ones will probably be Frankenhooker.
Nice.
Have you seen these movies? Usually I never write fan letters, but I thought you might appreciate the feedback. I also wanted to mention that I'm from Berlin, Germany.
Awesome.
Yeah. So you know you have at least one fan there.
That's always really cool.
Yeah, that's really awesome. Always enjoy the new episodes, so keep up the good work. From Simone.
Yay.
Simone, that is very sweet. Thank you
that
so much
really
for
sweet.
Writing.
Thank you.
As far as the Vegan Black Metal Chef, I saw it. I love it. But I think that recipe for pad thai is kind of a weird recipe.
Oh, really?
It's kind of liquidy. Like, it's kind of a weird preparation. But at the same time, I appreciated that he cut the vegetables with such flair and such amazing equipment. And I appreciated the soundtrack.
Yeah,
very much.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
I am going to actually try and make that recipe just because I love the video so much.
Nice.
And then as far as the movie nights, you know,
that sounds like so much fucking fun. And
that does
I wish
sound really
that
fun.
Simone lived around here so that I could join her movie nights.
Yes.
That is awesome.
But you know, I haven't seen any of these movies. I'd be willing to bet that my husband
Except
has seen all of them. Oh yeah, I've seen The Room, of course. But,
of course.
But actually, Killer Clowns from Outer Space, when I was a kid, a bunch of the neighborhood kids watched it, and I refused because I thought it would be way too terrifying.
Yeah.
So I never watched it.
Goodness.
I still have it.
It's on Netflix.
Clowns are actually really scary. I think I might find it legitimately scary instead of just kind of like, ha ha ha. But I don't know. I'm kind of weird about that stuff.
I have not seen Killer Clowns from Outer Space either, although I really should someday. I do not have a fear of clowns, although I can acknowledge that they are fucking creepy.
Yes.
Like, I know people who have said that they were traumatized by the movie It and Tim Curry's character, and I can see that, but it doesn't happen for me. But I have seen Frankenhooker. I saw it a long time ago, but I remember it being very funny. I appreciated it. And dang, that sounds like a really fun, awesome movie night. And,
it really does. We should try and do that in the future. Have one of our own, and then we
totally.
Can tell our listeners.
Well,
about.
Hey, dude, we're waiting for that Blu-ray of.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Drive Angry, right?
That's right. Yeah, we've.
Drive Angry.
I think it ships on like May 31st.
Yes.
Is the date that it's supposed to. I don't know if I told our listeners, but I pre-ordered Drive Angry like a month ago.
Yeah.
So that we would have it.
And if you're the kind that doesn't mind spoilers for insanely bad movies and told in a very humorous way, then you should listen to the How Did This Get Made podcast about the episode about Drive Angry, because it's so funny and it's what made me want to watch this movie despite it clearly being a steaming pile of shit.
I am really looking forward to it.
I know, me too. It sounds so fucking amazing. Anyway.
So thank you, Simone, for your letter, and
yes,
write
you.
Us back anytime you like.
Yes. Anyway, this next one is
wow, that one's a novel.
Yeah, I know. But this one is extra special because
right.
it comes with two pictures of a cute dog.
Aww. A dog wearing goggles.
They're doggles.
That's pretty adorable.
It's a very cute looking German Shepherd, and in the top picture, the dog is wearing doggles.
Yes.
Custom made dog goggles. And the tail is a blur because she is wagging her tail. Or
yes.
her. He. Let's see. Yes. She. Jen writes, "Hi, ladies. First time writer, long time listener here. I have really been enjoying your podcast. You both seem like you'd be super fun to have drinks with." We are. We totally are.
Yes. Cheers.
The point of this email is to ask your advice on a weird situation that happens to me a lot. Episode 62, where you guys were talking about dudes yelling at you on the street, made me think of it. I have a super adorable dog who I walk around the neighborhood, and people often stop and give me compliments on her. This is fine, and I actually appreciate it. However, things get weird when people proposition me to knock up my dog, i.e. they want her to have their dog's puppies. This seems so fucked up to me, partly because I'm so against backyard breeders and all of the overpopulation issues they cause. Amen. And partly because, geez, that's just so forward to ask someone you've never met something like that. And also ridiculous that as the person with the dog that would be carrying the puppies, that I'd have to deal with a pregnant dog and vet bills and having God knows how many puppies aside from the one that they would want. And then there are the feminist issues. I would never want to force any female creature to get pregnant against her wishes. I adopted my dog from a rescue group, and she was fixed when I got her. I would have done that immediately were she not, so I guess I'm not really fully for giving dogs complete reproductive freedom, but I digress. So I usually just tell people, sorry, she's fixed. I got her from a rescue group, and they almost always spay and neuter the dogs to prevent unplanned puppies, and then go on my merry way. But then I feel awful for like a day, because what I wish I had said was, you fucking asshole! This dog used to live on the streets and was 10 pounds underweight and still has fucking emotional issues because someone like you didn't fix their dog and didn't take care of the puppy she had. Have you taken more than like 5 seconds to consider everything that's involved in having a dog give birth? Have you had your dog's hips x-rayed to show that they're healthy? What about his parents and grandparents? Note, she's a German Shepherd, and this is a huge problem with the breed. When breeding German Shepherds, particular care needs to be taken to try and eliminate this issue rather than exacerbate it. And basically just spew a lecture on why backyard breeding is so bad in general. But I never do, because that seems a bit over the top and a really rude reaction to a neighbor who stopped to pay my dog a compliment. I need help finding a middle ground that is a polite way to educate people and hopefully dissuade them from pursuing this very bad idea. What do you think would be the right thing to say in this situation? Thanks much. Keep up the good work. I hope I get to take you ladies out for drinks sometime when I'm in town to show my appreciation for the show. And then she adds, attached is a picture of my highly desirable dog for the references.
Well, yeah, she is highly desirable for snuggles.
I think she is beautiful regardless of her reproductive capability.
Yes, and me too.
Jen, the thought never entered my mind.
So I guess the thing that came to my mind, my advice that I would give is, basically we're being videotaped, sorry, weirdo. I think if it were me and I were walking a dog and somebody were to ask me that question, I think I would just say straight up, you know, thank you for the compliment, but I don't believe in breeding dogs. You know, they're so overpopulated as it is, and there's so many amazing dogs in shelters that don't have health problems and everything.
Yeah.
And like, you know, honestly, like, if you're looking for a puppy, there's probably 80,000 of them at the local shelter.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Let me tell you where that is, or whatever else. I think it's possible to kind of say something. Like, my first instinct would be, too, to be like, fuck you, you asshole. Like, no, you can't impregnate my fucking dog. I mean, what kind of person are you that asks that? But I think that there's a way to kind of say, you know, that you don't, and let them know that you don't really swing that way, and give them an idea of what else they might do while still being relatively pleasant and, like, you know, not that Jen is, like, considering being a dick or anything like that, but I think the middle ground is just kind of like keeping an upbeat and pleasant tone of voice and just being clear about what it is that you think and what you would do or what you recommend for that situation.
Yeah. Yeah, I can definitely understand her frustration and the temptation to be like, oh, of course not, you fucking idiot. But, you know, it's important to remember that, you know, for most of us, we all begin from a certain position of ignorance on a lot of these animal rights issues. And, you know, they believe in earnest that they're paying you a genuine compliment, that your dog is beautiful, and that therefore, you know, your dog is a prime example of that breed, and her genes should be carried on.
Right.
And, you know, you're absolutely right to, you know, feel disgusted the way that you do when people say this to you. for all of the reasons you mentioned. I think that's a really, you know, incredible thought out explanation of why it makes you feel the way you feel. And I can agree with pretty much all of it, I think. And but yeah, I agree, you know, with you, Jordan. You just gotta, it's really tough sometimes. I know, you know, I've been vegan for 11 years and there are still times when I want to just scream at people who ask me yes. stupid things. But you know, Colleen Patrick-Goudreau mentions this in the Vegan's Daily Companion that, you know, remember for most of the people who are asking you those questions in earnestness, if they're not being a jerk and trying to make fun of you, you know, for a lot of those people, you're the first person they've ever asked that. So right. even if you've heard that question a million times, it may not be like, you know, the millionth time they've asked somebody that.
Right.
So, you know, to have somebody fly off the handle would seem completely inexplicable to them and, you know, would obviously close them off to your reasons for flying off the handle. They would be completely disinterested.
Right.
And I think you have an understanding of that and an inkling of how human social interaction works.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think I need to belabor that point, but yeah, I think that's great. I think, you know, what Jordan suggested, just saying, you know, thank you, but I don't want to breed dogs. I think there are too many homeless dogs that need homes now. And I would even go one step further and suggest researching local German Shepherd rescues in your area.
Yeah,
so that when people
that's a great
ask,
idea.
You can say, no, you know, I don't want to bring more puppies into the world. In fact, there's a German Shepherd rescue with a lot of beautiful German Shepherds that are looking for homes. And here's right. their number.
Right,
and,
right.
There's a German Shepherd on TV right now. Oh, no.
No, that looks like a puggle.
No, they had a... it's a montage of dogs.
What are
but that was a puggle.
Oh my God, is it like toothpaste?
It's like a tooth spray.
Oh my God.
It's hilarious. I think Molly and I should be in this commercial.
I think
I could brush her teeth every day.
Yeah.
And you can use it on
humans. We can use it ourselves. Hooray. I'm sorry to detract from your...
They showed some cats. That must mean it's okay for cats.
Yes.
Unless, like, it's on mute, so it's probably like, do not use on cats! Do not use on cats! But they just show a picture of the cat and like, hey, it's safe for cats!
That's awesome. Okay, anyways. So I think, Jen, in sum, but I think that what an amalgamation of Erica and I would say, if we were you, take a second to wrap your mind around that, is... it's something to the effect of, you know, that we just don't believe in breeding dogs, that there are lots of dogs out there, and that, you know, if they're interested in having a puppy or another dog, that there are, you know, local rescues and everything else that they can go to. And I think just one more thing is I don't think I would even necessarily bring up the fact that she's fixed as a reason that you don't want to do it. I think I would say, I believe in maybe say kind of after you said that you don't believe in breeding, say I also believe in, you know, spaying and neutering dogs because, yeah. you know, I want to decrease the overpopulation problem as much as I can. And so, of course, my dog is spayed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, then you're not saying like, oh, I would, but she's spayed.
Or, yeah.
Like, she was spayed
totally.
Before I got her. Because that, like, obviously that's not what you mean, but I could see somebody interpreting that as you kind of being like, oh, I'm so sorry, I wish that she wasn't, because would like to
even
have...
if that's explicitly not what you're saying, what some people will do to hear what they want to hear.
Exactly. So, like, I could see somebody who's really into dog breeding, like, you know, thinking that you were like, you know, oh, you know, too bad, but when I got her, she was already spayed and there's nothing I can do about it, rather than you kind of being like, well, I believe in spaying my animals, and so my dog is spayed.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
I think that's what we have to say. But also, yes, come back to San Francisco soon. We will definitely go for a drink with you at Smuggler's Cove if you want.
That'd be totally fun.
Or
and bring your dog and her doggles.
Yes. So our last email is from my sister.
A past guest.
A past guest and frequent correspondent. And she wrote to us today.
Excellent.
Which was nice of her.
Breaking news.
Yes. And so she, Jessica, says, "Dear Erica and Jordan, I'm just writing to you because I'm bored and hungry at work."
And hungry.
Yes. Here's what my work looks like.
A cold, cavernous gray room with like 200 people all in little cubicles under fluorescent lights talking on phones with broken headsets to angry people. However, we do have computers, and while most websites are blocked, I do have access to Gmail, as well as Yahoo News, the worst site ever.
Agreed.
Since you guys keep forgetting what you're going to talk about, I'm going to give you a list of topics, all taken from Front Yahoo's front page. So here she has included a list of
talking points.
So I will read them off, and then we will talk
Jessica
about them.
I think Jessica should be our manager.
Probably. Let's see. The slut walk. Yahoo commenters are naturally anti-slut walk.
surprise.
It started in Toronto, but is becoming a worldwide phenomenon. The second thing is Arnold Schwarzenegger's shocking affair. The third is Lady Gaga is now more powerful than Oprah, according to some lists of powerful celebrities. Let's see. High school football refs are punished for flouting the rules and wearing pink whistles and donating their game checks to a breast cancer foundation.
Shock.
Another thing she says is there's actually a story about vegetarian professional athletes, but it doesn't open properly, which is relatively common on my work computers. Thanks, Jessica.
Sounds like a quality workplace.
And then finally, a new class of planets is discovered, which Yahoo describes as massive gas giants that drift through space.
Heyo.
Anyway, if you need things to get mad about, or if you ever need things to get mad about, Yahoo is chock full of crazed, sensational goodness.
I bet.
There's also some stuff about Nancy Kerrigan's brother's murder trial, which reminds me that right after getting bashed in the knee, Nancy Kerrigan supposedly said what is probably my favorite quote of all time, which is, "Why me? Why anyone?" So that's all I have to say, and it killed a good 15 minutes. Only 7 more hours to go.
Oh, God. I hear you, Jessica.
Yes. Well, Jessica is now happily off work.
Thank you for hanging in there.
Yes, but we appreciate the emails, and we will talk about the things that you've suggested.
Yes, but I also have a packed docket for us,
yes,
as it were. Including, there's a few of those things. I thought it would be nice to touch upon the slut walk and Arnold Schwarzenegger. But first, I wanted to throw this your way. According to the San Francisco Chronicle, novelist Danielle Steele.
Uh-oh. I don't like where this is going.
Longtime San Francisco resident.
Really?
Is fleeing the city. Would you like to guess why? It's because there's a certain quality of San Franciscans that she cannot stand.
Is it the gay?
No. No, the gays are like dramatic and fabulous. That's like what her novels are all about. She probably loves the gays.
I suppose. I'm not sure.
San Francisco, this is a quote from Danielle Steele.
Where is she going?
Anyway, San Francisco is a great city to raise children, but I was happy to leave it. There's no style. Nobody dresses up. You can't be chic there. It's all shorts and hiking boots and Tevas. It's as if everybody is dressed to go on a camping trip. I don't think people really care how they look there. That's a quote from Danielle Steele, who, by the look of this thumbnail, is wearing a dress that appears to be cutting off circulation to her right breast, or at least bisecting her right breast.
Anyway, well,
unless that's Danielle Steele.
What I have to say to Danielle Steele in response is that obviously the only places in San Francisco that she ever goes are the places that are frequented by mass numbers of non-San Franciscans. Because San Franciscans don't wear shorts because it's fucking cold. They don't wear Tevas because it's fucking cold.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? Like, I would love to wear shorts all the time. Probably not the unfashionable shorts that she refers to. But maybe. But, I mean, if I wear shorts, I have to wear leggings underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly would not be wearing sandals. So, I think that Danielle Steele is full of shit and is referring, in fact, to all the tourists that flock to San Francisco and to places like North Beach.
What about the velour tracksuit and the Uggs?
I don't ever see those. Honestly, I don't see those in San Francisco.
Well, I guess maybe to be fair, you don't really hang out in Pack Heights.
That's true. I mean, maybe there are parts of San Francisco where that is a thing, but honestly, I don't see it.
Yeah.
You know, I see hippies, for sure. Yeah. I see people with, like, kind of, like, wacky fashion sometimes. But even then, like, most of them do seem to put care and attention into what they're wearing. I mean, on my, I see a lot of hipsters because I live close to the Mission and I'm in the Mission fairly regularly. I see tourists and I see businessmen up here in North Beach where we work. And the tourists are dressed badly and the businessmen are always dressed like businessmen.
Yeah.
And then, other than that, I consider myself unfashionable.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, like, I'm not a disaster. I'm just kind of, like, I don't know, I like my dark colors.
Yeah.
I wear clothes that fit for the most part. And
yeah.
I don't wear things that are kind of shockingly horrible.
No.
I don't consider myself a fashion plate, but I don't consider myself a fashion disaster. And I don't think Danielle Steele would either.
I can see some of her point. Like, I think probably our working people dress more casually than they would in places like New York.
Or, yeah, definitely.
Know, like, I mean, they would maybe the 50s. But
I mean, look at our office. Everybody there dresses.
Well, our office, you know, kind of an exception. But even in, you know, like, the big offices along Market Street and, you know, like, .com offices, like, people, I think people, they don't dress formally, but they still dress nicely. They wear, you know, if they wear jeans, they're wearing, like, $300 jeans because they work for dot-coms and they're, like, you know, millionaire assholes at the age of 20.
Or at least, like, kind of clean, well-fitting jeans.
Yeah. So, I agree that there's been a decline in formality, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing all the time. I don't necessarily think it's a decline in quality or style. But I do think I take issue with, in recent years, I've attended both one funeral and one wedding where there was an attendee, at least one attendee in jeans. And actually, at the funeral I went to, there was an attendee in jeans, and then there were also attendees in literally in shorts and Tevos.
Yikes, what funeral was that?
It was my friend's grandfather's funeral, and the people in shorts and Tevas were the, like, two of the children of the deceased who lived in Hawaii. So it was like this whole, like, hey, we're casual and Hawaiian, and we've got shorts and Tevas on, and they were wearing leis at the funeral, and it's like, but the grandfather wasn't from Hawaii, and he didn't live there, and yeah.
It's a little odd.
It's not really like a traditional Hawaiian thing. I don't know that he would have appreciated the gesture of his children showing up to his funeral in shorts and sandals.
So
in a nice, like, mortuary funeral home with, like, it was very traditional. Like, it was an open casket viewing, and I had to ask the usher, I was like, can I just not go up there? And he's like, yeah, sure. I was like, I don't know if I'm ready to see a dead dude, sorry.
Yeah, I think, but again, see, that's kind of like transplants, you know? Those are Hawaiians, not San Franciscans.
No, they were from California. They've moved, they live in Hawaii now.
But I mean, that was a Hawaiian style that they imported.
I guess. But the wedding I was at, there was a dude wearing jeans, and he was probably, I don't know if he was from California, but...
Was it a fancy wedding?
It was in a hotel in, like, downtown San Francisco. Like, my, you know... My dad had a tie on.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
he was the only one in jeans.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way. So, okay. If you're the only one in jeans, it's probably a bad sign.
Right. I don't know. I mean, I guess, like, things are more casual here, but I honestly, like, I think that people are better dressed in San Francisco than where I'm from.
Sure.
You know.
I would also raise the point that San Franciscans are occasionally unstylish, but we are so out of necessity because it is fucking brutal here sometimes.
Yeah. Well, like, you need to wear a billion layers all the time.
Or at least take a billion layers with you because the weather can change at the drop of a hat.
Well, I mean, right now I'm wearing jeans and then I'm wearing a t-shirt, but then I'm wearing a cardigan and then over the cardigan I'm wearing a plaid shirt. So.
And then you have a jean jacket and a leather jacket as well.
Right.
Or faux leather.
Which is falling apart and I need to replace.
But yeah, it gets freaking windy, it gets rainy, it gets cold, it gets crazy hot. It's just freaking nuts here. So,
yeah.
You know, sometimes you can't go out in your 4-inch stilettos and your cute mini dress on, you know, a July day because it's fucking 30 degrees and raining sleet sideways with 70-mile-an-hour winds. That's just how San Francisco is, Danielle Steele. You're going to have to get over it. Some days you just have to put on a windbreaker and deal.
Yes. But I mean, I'm looking around the bar where we are now, and I just don't see anybody who's poorly dressed.
No.
At all. I don't see a single person. I see people who maybe aren't dressed in the same fashion in which I would dress myself, which is all of them. But I don't see anybody that's wearing, you know, shorts and sandals or, you know, everybody looks pretty well groomed and they're wearing nice tops and sweaters and shawls and, you know, I think they're doing okay, so.
Well, Danielle Steele, we're sorry to see you go.
Not really.
Yeah, not really. I definitely wanted to talk about my new feminist hero, Roseanne Barr.
Oh, yes, we need to talk about Roseanne Barr.
If you have not read the article yet, then crawl out from under whatever rock you've been living under and go to New York Magazine online, GTS, New York Magazine, and there was a recent article by Roseanne Barr discussing her experiences as a woman in the television industry in the late 80s and early 90s.
Yes.
Well, I guess throughout the majority of the 90s, because Roseanne ended in, what, 97 or 98?
Something like that, yeah. It had a long run.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was nine seasons. So I guess it started in 88, so that would mean, 97.
Okay. So, yeah, through the late 80s and most of the 90s. And it's an incredible read. I won't, you know, go into any spoilers or anything, but I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's a huge secret that, you know, women in television are treated like shit. Surprise! And there's a lot of sexism even today in the industry, but especially in the 80s when Roseanne first went to, start her own show.
Yeah.
And, so yeah, she just writes frankly and honestly and openly about her experiences, and they're appalling.
Yeah.
And
oh, totally appalling.
But the way she handles herself is admirable. I mean, it's not always like the best response to a situation, which I'm sure many people are eager to criticize her for. But you know what? At least she opened her mouth and she said, this is not okay. And because she opened her mouth and said, this is not okay, I think she paved the way for so many incredible women in TV today. Like, you know, I think about like Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, even though I'm really pissed at Tina Fey right now. But, you know, I remember when Roseanne was on the air and, you know, you and I were both kids. We were like, you know, in 1988, I was 8. You were probably like 8 or 7.
Yeah,
right?
7 or 8, yeah.
So I didn't really fully understand the feminist politics behind show, obviously. But I remember hearing like, oh, Roseanne's crazy. She's a total prima donna and she's a bitch and she's a tyrant on the set and everyone hates her. And, you know, there are all these jokes at her expense and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, looking back at it now from an adult perspective, I'm like, holy shit, it was just a fucking witch hunt. Like, they demonized her because she was, she was an overweight, average-looking woman who was fucking funny, who was fucking intelligent, and who stood up for herself and wouldn't, like, put up and shut up when the people in charge, you know, she challenged people's authorities, and that fucking scared the shit out of them.
Right.
And looking back at that now, I'm like, God damn, that was so brave, and that was so badass.
Yeah.
And now, to compound that badassness, she lives in fucking Hawaii and farms macadamia nuts.
I know.
Like, what the fuck, Roseanne? Like, how can you get any more awesome? And before I hand it over to you, I would like to read my favorite quote from the entire article, where I don't even remember. This was just, you know, after one of her, you know, in this long campaign of frustration about men stealing credit from her and being sexist to her, and the women that play along with that sexist game in order to get ahead.
I know the quote, and I know what happened. It was. The incident that led up to that quote was she had repeatedly requested that her wardrobe
That's a different quote. It was like, bitch, I will fucking kill you. That was what she said.
Really?
With the scissors. Yeah,
oh,
it was
okay.
different.
Okay.
But anyway, this quote, this is my favorite quote, and I like to draw strength from it in times of darkness.
I will win this battle if I have to kill every last white bitch in high heels around here. Roseanne Barr. And over to you.
And, well, that is inspirational. I mean...
For the Canadian perspective, we go to Jordan.
Yes, well, I really loved the article as well.
Yes.
And I, you know, it's true. It's funny how when you're a kid, you take that kind of stuff for granted. I remember watching Roseanne, and I remember thinking that it wasn't exactly like my family, but it was, you know, a lot like my friends' families. Like, I saw reflected in Roseanne a lot of people that I knew and, you know, kind of a sense of family that was familiar to me and you know, a kind of sense of community that was familiar to me.
It didn't seem sterilized like so many sitcoms.
No,
did.
and it didn't make me think like, oh, if only my life was like in Roseanne. It wasn't that kind of thing that encourages you to, it wasn't a, you know, perfect vision of, you know, family life in the late 80s or early 90s. It was a realistic look. I mean, obviously not totally 100% everything that happened in that show could happen in real life, but it was a lot more realistic than pretty much anything else on TV. And it, you know, that never really hit me until... I hadn't even thought of Roseanne until I read that article. People were linking to it on Facebook and everything. And I read it, and I was just like, shit. You know, I watched a lot of that show growing up. And it now that I'm looking back on it as an adult and as somebody who, you know, is critical of a lot of pop culture and, like, TV shows that are out there now... It's a miracle that that show ever existed.
Seriously.
And, like, it's really a testament to Roseanne being a fucking hard ass in the best possible way and getting it made and toughing it out. Because she did not have... She did not have an easy time. It was not... Nothing was handed to her. She was...
No.
She had to fight for everything
she
that
really
she got.
Did.
And that is just... I mean, I think that's really incredible. I think that she deserves a lot of credit. And I think that we should have a Roseanne viewing party really soon.
I think so, too. Although there is one episode where Darlene goes vegetarian and then Roseanne makes her serve pulled pork sandwiches at their, like, county fair booth. And Darlene, like, throws a fit and they get in a fight.
Yeah.
And I think Roseanne makes a lot of poor vegetarian jokes. But I think she kind of gets redeemed for that. She went vegetarian for a little while after the show ended. I don't think she still is, but as long as she keeps growing those sweet, sweet macadamia nuts.
I know. I mean, I wonder if we could, like, order macadamia nuts directly from Roseanne's farm. That would be amazing.
Oh, my God. I'm going to send her a fucking email and ask her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I...
That, and will you be on our podcast?
Yeah. Will you marry us? Yeah, I don't know. Like, I just... It was not really surprising to read her account of what happens and her career and everything else. But it was actually unusual to read an account that was that frank.
Yes.
And so I think that that was the thing that really pissed me off was that after she wrote and released that account, The Guardian published some fucking idiot's response.
That fucking idiot, their name is... Oh, no, didn't print their name.
No.
It was like Julie something or other. I don't know.
Yeah, some moron printed like
anyway.
Roseanne's article is 4 solid pages long.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really detailed account of all the stuff that happened. And this person prints like a half page long rebuttal where she accuses Roseanne of trashing her own history. And basically doing feminism a disservice by speaking up about all this stuff that happened. Basically, her point, as far as I could make it, was that the writer, liked the show and enjoyed the end product. So whatever went into making it must have been okay.
Right, exactly. The end justifies the means.
Right.
I think it's entirely possible to enjoy the end product. It was still a fucking amazing show. And
Absolutely.
It was a fucking amazing show because she had to fight so hard to get it.
Right.
And I think hearing about how hard she had to fight, and she had to do some unpleasant shit. I'm sure some of her behavior is really unpleasant. I'm sure she did some regrettable things and hurt some people. Right. But I think everybody does. Men certainly do, but they don't get fucking called out on it and dragged her through the mud for
it. I mean, if John Goodman had written this article,
yeah,
would he be accused exactly. of trashing his own history? Would he be accused of, yeah. you know, being like a man traitor? Like, what would he...
Yeah, I think, you know, they would... This article doesn't diminish the impact that the show had. I think, if anything, it heightens it.
Right.
Because you appreciate so much more what she had to go through to get that very earnest picture of a working class right. family with a totally normal, average American-looking mom. Like, they just picked some lady off the street, right. you know? She wasn't some Hollywood actress. She wasn't right. like Uma Thurman pretending to be, you know, an Illinois, suburban Illinois mother of three, you know?
Right. I don't know. Yeah, I feel like the rebuttal really, really missed the mark.
And doesn't she say something really patronizing about, like, this is a shame for all of feminism, or something
right, I think
really
so.
Shitty like that?
Of course she should be talking for all of feminism.
But yeah, in Barr's case, it's not about her being silenced because she's a woman. If your method of communicating is shouting, sulking, and threats of violence, of course you won't get what you want. Of course, or worse, you will, along with a reputation as a capricious tyrant.
Well, which is just so unfair, because it's like, whenever Roseanne would shout or, you know, use threats or anything like that, and not that those are great ways to get attention, but yeah. she did that because that was... the last thing she could do.
Yeah, exactly.
She tried every reasonable exactly. avenue, and she was frustrated at every reasonable avenue. So
yeah,
she had to resort to unreasonable behavior. So you're basically saying that if you try every reasonable avenue and you're shut down by, like, sexist, classist
yeah.
fuckwits, then you should just give up.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't want to be a capricious
yeah.
tyrant.
Great message. And then the last sentence is, or the last paragraph is, at the end of the article, where, by the way, she reassures us she's not bitter. I wouldn't be bitter, dude, if I lived in Hawaii and grew macadamia nuts.
Yeah, no kidding.
I can't get past the macadamia nut thing. That's amazing. I wasn't left feeling like a righteous blow had been struck for the sisterhood, or that a once-feted star was vandalizing the memory of a brilliant show because she's unable to let go of her anger at not getting her own way. Okay, first of all, she did get her own way. She's letting
yeah.
us know how she got her own way. She's letting the sisterhood know
right.
so that they can go out and get their own way, because clearly asking politely has not been working, has
right.
it?
Well, exactly. And, you know, why should a woman be under any more obligation to ask politely when
yeah.
it doesn't get results than a man?
Well, it's like the saying goes, you know, which I've seen everywhere in, like, every office I've ever worked in. Well-behaved women rarely make history.
Exactly.
And, you know, I mean, I think, to me, the most glaring contradiction in this whole article is the fact that, you know, if Roseanne had done as the author suggests and just, you know, meekly put up and shut up and, you know, not fought tooth and nail for every, you know, every right that she deserved as a creator and as a human being and as an artist... You know, if she had just given up and let people walk all over her, the product would be a substandard show or no show at all. The
exactly.
show would have been canceled.
Exactly.
So, you know, she's upset because her memory of this beautiful show is tarnished.
Right.
But you know what? Without the ugly, there would be no good. You know,
right.
there would be none of it if it hadn't been ugly.
Right.
So, fucking deal.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the end, Roseanne rules, and whoever wrote this dumb rebuttal is a fucking idiot.
They rule.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Totally.
All right.
So
should we discuss some of Jessica's?
Yeah, let's do this. We don't have a ton of time, but
yeah, I was full of piss and vinegar.
Well, no, we had a lot of emails to get through. Well, I guess the first one is the slut walk, and I was actually discussing this on the PBK today.
Yes.
So the slut walk, for those of you not in the know, began in Canada, in Toronto, and it was basically a response to police and governmental and kind of a general societal attitude that, well, in order to avoid getting raped, women, you should not wear short skirts.
Wasn't there one official who actually said something like, if women didn't dress like sluts, they wouldn't get raped? Or
I'm
something.
Sure.
They insinuated something, but they actually used the word slut.
I'm not sure. That may have been the case in other things. I know that in Toronto it was specifically police officials responding to, threats of, like, serial rapists and things like that, saying that, you know, women should take steps to protect themselves, and
right.
one of the things that they should do is not wear short skirts, not wear provocative clothing
right.
and stuff like that.
I think men should really take steps to not rape people.
Yes, I tend to agree. But so the slut walk was basically a response to that, where women would go out and wear short skirts and,
right.
you know, revealing clothing and say, you know, look, hey, we're still not consenting to you sexually harassing or assaulting or
yeah.
making advances on us just because of the nature of our clothing.
Right.
So I think that insofar as the slut walk is a response to that kind of language and that kind of thinking that women need to, you know, protect themselves from rape by dressing in a certain way or behaving in a certain way or anything, I think the slut walk is a pointed and, like, totally apropos form of protest. But I know that there's been criticism of these things as basically... people have said, for one, that it doesn't recognize the fact that there are women who have to dress like that for work out of necessity,
right.
And that it also just capitalizes on, or it basically says, you know, oh, well, the only way that a woman could have anything worthwhile to say is if she's saying it with skimpy clothes. And to that, I kind of say balderdash. I mean, I totally think that those are both valid opinions, but I think that they just don't really intersect with what the slut walk was started to address. I mean,
uh-huh.
it's a specific concern. It's not like, it's not a thing like, I mean, it's not kind of like a more general feminist march. It's just like, you know, women's rights or anything like that. It's aimed at a very specific statement or attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that dressing in skimpy clothes is very related to that specific kind of attitude and
yeah.
combating it. So, I mean, you can't really say, we can dress however we want, but we're going to go on this march wearing what you think we should wear.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like,
totally.
That just doesn't really make sense. That doesn't, it kind of undermines the message.
Yeah.
So it's like, you kind of have to put your money where your mouth is and say, like, look, I'm going to dress in, like, a micro mini skirt and, like, a super small tank top or
yeah.
whatever, and like you, it's still rape if you have sex
yeah,
with me
yeah.
without my consent, and like
yeah.
it's still assault if you whatever. So I don't know. Like I think slut walk, as far insofar as it that's what it's addressing, that's the issue that it's addressing, is effective activism. And hell yeah, I think the women, if they want to wear skimpy clothes, like should get to wear skimpy clothes.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. Yeah. So whatever. That's what I say. What do you think?
I haven't really been following it all that much. I know they recently had it in London, or they're going to soon. And it was controversial there. And I read an interesting interview with a panel of feminists, including one who's a British Arab comedian who does jokes in like hijab, like she has a headscarf when she does jokes, and she describes like that really hilarious, like uncomfortable moment of silence when she first gets on stage and like takes the mic and everyone's like, because they've never seen a woman like her on stage at a comedy club. But yeah, it was interesting. There was a big, you know, they were divisive between whether it was a positive or a negative thing. And, you know,
right.
some people were saying exactly what you said. Others were saying, like, it implies that sex workers can't participate in this because their default dress code is skimpy clothing or something like
Which
that.
Which I totally do not understand. Because
yeah.
it seems like this kind of protest and this message is very inclusive of sex workers and very beneficial to sex workers, where you're
yeah.
saying basically it doesn't matter if a person is wearing a micro mini skirt or if they're
people,
a sex worker, their no still means no.
Yeah, I guess people feel like maybe there's this implication that people on the slut lore are slumming it by dressing like sex workers or something like that.
Well, but what if they aren't? What if they're people who, I'm serious. What if they're women who like to go out to clubs wear skimpy clothes? Like, that's not slumming it. That's they want to wear on a Saturday night. I mean, maybe it's not their work uniform, but you'd still think that, like, I mean, if somebody were advocating for the right to wear khaki pants without, you know, without this kind of, like, discrimination and harassment, don't you think that, you know, it would get a warmer reception?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's lots of women who have to wear khaki pants to work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. That totally does not make sense to me.
Well, I thought there was another argument from, like, a queer activist that says that she didn't understand the entire concept because, you know, her entire life and her concept of being, I guess, and presenting herself is that she just simply does not dress for men.
Right.
And whereas, you know, straight women to one degree or another, like, at some point will dress for men. And she felt like the slut walk was embracing a way of dressing for men. Even though it was like to...
That's bullshit.
But even though it was like to confront and contradict the, you know, objectification of women dressed like that.
That's utter bullshit. Is she saying that no lesbian has ever dressed for their partner?
No, she's saying lesbians don't dress for men.
Right, but so they dress... So who gives a shit whether it's men or women? You're dressing for somebody else. But
she's saying that the skimpy clothes and stuff like that is dressing for men. That's what she says.
But that's bullshit because it's not. I mean, I don't know. Come on. I mean, really? She's saying that no lesbian has ever dressed skimpily for their partner? Like, is that, I'm not, like, putting you on the spot.
I could be misquoting the article, I'm not sure.
No, I mean...
It was yesterday.
I'm not putting you on the spot, but that's bullshit. That's utter bullshit to say that the only people that ever dress skimpily are straight, you know, assumedly cisgendered women who are dressing for men.
Mm-hmm.
Does that not seem like an incredibly ignorant statement to make?
Yeah.
And would that not be an incredibly ignorant thing if I, as a straight woman, were to say that, you know, lesbians dress, you know, only for women because they wear plaid shirts and jeans? Like, that's such an ignorant, overgeneralizing, like, you know, I'm going to take my own personal experience and universalize it because this is how I feel inside. Like, that does not okay feminist policy make, and that just pisses me off, especially when somebody brandishes their, like, minority card. Like, not only am I a woman, but I'm a queer woman, or not only am I a woman, but I'm a transgender woman, or I'm a woman of, like, just whatever. Like, don't try and out-minority each other.
Right,
stand in solidarity and be constructive, or shut the fuck up. When somebody else is trying to do something constructive.
Jordan's laying down the smack.
Well, I mean, it pisses me off. It really, really pisses me off. I think it's incredibly alienating to women. Like, when you fracture the feminist movement, when you basically cut out, you know, say, like, any segment, whether it's, you know, more radical people cutting out, you know, the white middle class straight women because they're privileged in relation to a lot of other feminists, or whether it's, you know, cutting out, you know, transsexual women or whatever else. Cutting out sections of feminism is counterproductive and stupid. I mean, if we want, you know, equal rights, if we want liberation and everything else, we need to live it, and we're not living it if we are constantly telling people that their activist movement is not feminist enough, or that it's problematic, or that it's privileged. Like, that's not productive. If you think that somebody's feminist activist, you know, thing is privileged or not positive, like, don't just write some fucking 40-page academic article about why it's bad. Come up with your own idea and implement it.
Yeah.
Do it. Like, just, you know, quit and quit analyzing things to the point where the only people that can understand feminism are academics with, like, 10 postdoctorate degrees.
Yeah.
And start implementing it in your real life, and implementing it in a way that, like, all women can understand and identify with and live.
Yeah.
Because you're not doing anybody any favors by over-intellectualizing things and by, like, just creating and constantly reinforcing these hierarchies within the movement that really needs to be concentrating on unity in order to have power.
Yeah, I mean, we're my majority of the population. We're 50% of the population.
Exactly. Why haven't we got this fucking done already?
So yeah, let's pull together and get this shit done. Let's take it over, girls.
And I mean, I don't mean that to say that nobody should, you know, read or write scholarly articles or books or anything about feminism.
Yeah, I mean, that's how progress happens.
And we shouldn't be thinking about this stuff. Yes, we should be thinking about this stuff. And yes, we should be learning about this stuff. But I think that we really need to learn to relate to each other in a way that isn't fucking sniping. And
Honestly,
I mean, I was talking to my sister today about this, and I was saying, you know, I can't read a lot of, like, feminist blogs anymore. And I find them, it's because I find the majority of them incredibly alienating. A lot of them tend to focus around particular issues that the writer is personally affiliated with, whether it's, you know, fat positivity in, like, a feminist blog, or, you know, gender queer issues and things like that. And not that those things are bad, those things are good. It's great that people are writing about that, but I don't see a lot of blogs that are written, you know, from a particular standpoint, but inclusive of different kinds of feminist modes of thinking and existing. And a lot of it I just see dissecting and criticizing rather than, you know, talking about the positive things that we should be doing to move forward. And I find that incredibly alienating, and I find that really counterproductive.
I find that there's a quote from Gloria Steinem that I saw in some movie, which I can't remember what it is, but it's kind of what, like, solidified my decision to, you know, identify as a feminist. And I think it's also a good guiding principle for feminists. And she said, feminism is not a press campaign, it's a movement.
Right.
And it's good to keep in mind, because I think a lot of these people are like, well, you know, how's that going to look, and how's it going to come across? And it's not necessarily about how it presents, it's about seizing the power.
Right.
And about, you know, it's not always going to be pretty, as Roseanne pointed, you know, as Roseanne demonstrates. It's not always going to be ladylike or perfect or ideal or phrased perfectly
or
presented in the least offensive manner possible. Sometimes it's going to be ugly, and people, you know, shit. It's got to be ugly to make it beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult line to walk where you say, like, on the one hand, you know, you want feminism to be an inclusive movement. You want it to be something that is, you know, that unifies people and empowers them. But then, like, it's hard then to reconcile that desire with, you know, well, then how do you deal with people who want feminism to be something different? Who want feminism to be only for, you know, the middle class white women, or who want it to be only for the biological women, or who want it to be only for, you know, the lesbians, or the, you know, the people who reject all pornography as rape or whatever.
Right.
You know, how do you deal with that kind of thing if you believe that feminism is for everybody?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. But I think that being thoughtful and being open and willing to talk about these things rather than so willing to criticize these things is just imperative. I think it's just crucial. And I think that anybody who identifies as feminist needs to think seriously about whether they're in a pissing contest for academic credentials or whether they're in it, you know, for real, for actual change and for empowering other women besides just themselves and the people who think exactly like them.
Yes.
And I will fully cop to, I have to work on that too. So.
Yeah. I think we all do.
Yeah, of course. I think the important thing is doing it, is realizing that, you know, everybody has their own particular viewpoint, and that doesn't make
anybody right or wrong. It just means that we need to find a way that we can all move forward together. Even if we differ on whether or not the slut walk is a good idea or a bad idea.
Right.
You know, the slut walk is a tiny little thing. Mm. And I think, you know, if women want to do this thing that they think is a constructive, positive way to move forward, then they should fucking do it. And,
amen.
You know, and if you want to organize an alternate thing, if you have another way that you think you can move the feminist movement forward, then you should do that. But I just think that constantly tearing down actions is just not...
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah.
The verdict has been reached.
So there you go. Those are my pontifications on feminism, which I'm afraid I think put us out of time to talk about anything else, but we can
save this
list for next week.
I kind of don't give a shit about Arnold Schwarzenegger's dick or where it's been anyway, so...
I actually have an interesting feminist point, I think, to make
about
it.
Okay, well, we can definitely touch upon that next week. I'm sure there will be much more juicy details revealed by then.
Yes, hopefully.
Oh, goodness. Anyway, until next episode, enjoy the post-apocalyptic wasteland. Remember not to drink the water. Do not drink the water.
Yes.
And do not go outdoors. Any other tips for the post-apocalyptic wasteland?
Not really. I'm not very good with post-apocalypse.
Yeah. It's an emerging study.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. Unless Beelzebub comes and sweeps us into his fold before then.
We'll see you next week, and feel free to email us with your apocalypse stories.
Yeah, we want apocalypse survival stories and tips.
Yes.